guys. I'm Rudy Jung.
Hello, my name is Joseph David Jones.
Hey, this is Kevin Sussman.
Hey, this is Amina Massoud.
I'm John Reese Davis, and you're listening to Script to Screen.
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 Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Script to Screen. We are here. We are back with a brand new episode this week. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be different. It's going to be entertaining. Not that we haven't been entertaining in the past, but you know, we're trying to keep you guys on your toes because if you haven't noticed, Had and I are deep, deep, deep in the works, in the working, in the under the construction, in the rebuilding, in the renovating of Script to Screen. We are entering fall season and on the way to entering winter. So this is when a lot of things, you know, we're doing a lot of that transformation, that metamorphosis with Script to Screen. Because again, to keep the show interesting, to keep the show popular, to keep you, our screeners, entertained, we have to adapt. And times are changing. Times are difficult in 2020. Normally on the show, we would be reviewing films on a weekly basis. We would be talking about the latest releases. We would be in the movie theater. But 2020 has made that very difficult for us. So in order to keep the show interesting, in order to keep the show, you know, popular with you guys, and in order to keep you guys entertained and enjoying the conversation that we are having on Script to Screen, we've had to make some adaptable changes. And I know I keep saying we, so I might as well bring him on. Join me in welcoming the solo to my Chewbacca, the one and only Han Solo.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm telling you, the spring cleaning stuff with Script to Screen is, it's tiring. It's exhausting. But it's fun. It is fun.
It's fun, yeah. Look, 2020 has been exhausting. Let's be realistic about that. But we're not going to delve into depression and sadness. No, we want people to take a break, people to change their moods and listen to us talk about our love for movies, our love for series, our love for the arts.
Exactly. Because nothing needs celebration in these times. Nothing needs as much celebration as the arts do. And this is why we keep doing what we're doing. And this is why we're here every single week, regardless of what is happening around us. We're just going to keep delivering Script to Screen to you, our screeners, the way they're used to. The way they're used to makes it sound predictable. We don't want to be predictable. We want to shake things up.
Yeah. We want to do things a bit differently.
Exactly. And if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that, you know, if life isn't predictable, why should this show be predictable? So in today's episode, that was a terrible transition.
That was not very good.
That's okay. We'll keep going. In today's episode, we're gonna play a little game, sort of. We're gonna be doing kind of, I don't even know how to explain it, but the way this episode's going to work is as follows. I'm going to talk about a favorite director or actor or screenwriter or whatever in the industry of mine. And from that, Had is going to talk about one of the films or television shows or maybe even soundtracks that these people worked on. And in return, going to have to link that to another talent, in which turn I will have to pick a film relating to that talent and so on and so forth. Did I explain that clearly, or is everybody as confused as they were when they first saw Interstellar or Inception?
I thought I understood before this conversation, but now it would seem that I did not understand. But let's try. Let's go with it and see what happens.
Let's rewind.
No, I think I get the gist. I get the idea.
Okay. I was worried there for a second. I was like, dang, did I get promoted to Nolan level of mindy, twisty, wibbly wobbly time stuff? But I'm, understood, we're okay. All right. So let me go ahead and start this off. I'm gonna start this off rather simple, and I'm gonna talk about J.J. Abrams.
Okay. Do you know what's very funny?
What
is that? We're doing this via the internet, right? We're recording online, and
yes.
In front of me on the TV screen on mute, I have got the Rise of Skywalker in the background, directed
Brilliant.
By JJ.
So that's like, awesome.
Is there a camera in my room? Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Are you
I am
doing
not,
this on purpose?
Let me tell you something. The reason why I'm picking J.J. Abrams is because I just finished another rewatch of The Rise of Skywalker last night. Let me tell you, okay, as problematic as the sequel trilogy is, I do love it. It's weird. I do love it. It has so many problems in connection to the rest of the saga, but I do love the sequel trilogy. Anyway, we're not talking about Star Wars. We're talking about J.J. Abrams. And I have to say, the reason why I like J.J. Abrams' work, and I think I like him as a creative, is because he's sort of developed this new status of resuscitator. Like, he brings things back to life. He's sort of a shaman in one way. I don't know what he does, but he breathes life into dead franchises. He did it with Mission Impossible. He did it with Star Trek, and then did it with Star Wars. And I think now he's going to be doing it in the DC universe because he's been brought on by Warner Brothers to kind of reboot in a way the DC franchise or some part of the DC universe or whatever. And I do like his work. I do like how he functions. I like the way that he tells stories. He has a brilliant TED Talk all about The Box, which is what he does in his stories, is that in all of his stories, there's something called The Box. And it's when a character discovers something or opens the box, there's another box inside it. And it's always like this layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. And I like that form of storytelling because it keeps you engaged. It keeps the mystery going. I do know that sometimes it can get kind of long-winded, lost. But in many cases, I think it works. And I think it worked in Star Wars. I think it worked in his TV show Alias. And it does work in the Mission Impossible that he directed, which was Mission Impossible 3. It had that kind of storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. He's someone I really like. He's one of those new directors.
Okay. Karam was almost like choking. He was holding his cough. Are you good? Yes. Okay. He's good. All right. So go with what you were saying about JJ. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Look, listen, I really like JJ. I think he's one of those, if you want, newer directors, even though he's been here for a while, but he has done a lot of work. He has rejuvenated a lot of franchises, as you said. And he's super creative. And I, for some reason, I associate him a lot and I see him a lot as a Spielberg-esque kind of director in some way. He has that creativity. He's a great storyteller. He's someone I really, really appreciate and love.
I mean, nothing says J.J. Abrams relating to Spielberg than one of my favorite films of J.J. Abrams, which is Super 8. I mean, that had Spielberg written all over it.
I was going to bring that up, actually, because Super 8, unlike most of his movies, is not him working with an existing franchise.
Right.
And he's done – it's such a beautiful film with such nice performances. And, you know, it's reminiscing of early Spielberg, where he worked with younger children, like in E.T. And so on. And it's just such a beautifully made movie. And I think he's a very, very talented person and has put his hand in the TV era. And I think he's one of the people that fortified TV series with Lost, with Alias. He put the TV on the map again. He made shows on TV watchable. He made them
cinematic.
What they are today, you know, with Lost, I think the first episode was back in the day had the biggest budget for an episode of a TV series. So he has done, you know, things right and properly.
Look, the lost pilot, that 2 hour pilot, because it is 2 hours, mm-hmm. like you can't watch just mm-hmm. the first hour on its own, that the pilot is 2 hours, that 2 hour opening for Lost is by far one of the best first episodes of a TV series I have ever seen. It is so beautifully, masterfully executed. I mean, it's genius. It's beautifully done.
I totally agree with you. So now I have to talk about someone he's collaborated with.
Yeah, or someone yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm going to go for something a bit different. But I'm going to talk with one of the composers he's worked with a lot, which is Michael Giacchino. I don't know if I said it.
Giacchino, I think.
Giacchino. Yeah. You know. Okay, so yeah. So I think, look, for both of us, we have a massive appreciation of John Williams.
Yes.
And he is the master Jedi, if you want. But his apprentice is doing things and has been writing scores for so many movies with JJ and other people. I mean, he has this particular sound, which I love. He brings a lot of gravitas when he needs to bring it. He brings a lot of emotion when he needs to bring it. Musically speaking, he is one of the best composers in the business, in my opinion. Even when he revisited some existing, if you want, themes, like in the Star Trek reboot, he gave that, I don't know, a little je ne sais quoi, as they say in French.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he is definitely someone who has put his mark on the composing, because we rarely talk about our score episodes, which we never really put online.
Yeah, I mean, we never necessarily put them online because were always afraid of copyright, you know?
Copyright. But we have talked about our appreciation for certain composers. And I think this is the first time that people will hear us talk a bit about composers, because they're underappreciated. Look, to make a movie, you need an army. You need a lot of people. And we always talk about the actors and the directors and whatnot. But we forget that there are composers, there are technicians, there are cinematographers. So many people doing that job. And composers, you know, try to watch a movie without music. It kills the whole experience. I mean, even before movies had sound in them, they had music in the background. Music has been such an integral part of movie making. And mm-hmm. Michael Giacchino has done such a fantastic job composing and, if you want, writing scores for so, so many movies with J.J. Abrams and even in the Marvel Universe and yep. so on. The list is massive, people. So hats off to Mr. Giacchino. I like saying that. I don't know why.
Oh, man. Fantastic. Before I move, I think you have to – do you have to pick someone new now? Yeah, okay. So before you do that, let me just say one quick thing. Because I do like what you said. I do like – that you mentioned our Script to Screen score episodes, which were at the time they were exclusive at the radio station where Script to Screen used to air live before, you know, we released that same episode as a podcast. I do want to say one thing. I do want to say that I would like to try to find a way for us to bring those episodes onto the podcast, even if it means not necessarily playing the entire track. Even if it means playing maybe 30 seconds of that track or even a minute. But I do miss you and I talking about the music of our favorite TV shows or movies, or like you said, giving the composers the recognition that they deserve. This is a show called Script to Screen. And music is in between that. Music is part of that. So I do want to see if there is a way we can maybe as a start, and we'll see how those episodes do on the feed, on the podcast feed for all you screeners. Maybe I'll start with the older episodes, but maybe like cut out the musical, the longer musical segments, and just kind of give you guys at least an idea as to what those episodes were like. And if we see that they're popular and that you guys are listening to them, then we'll start doing newer episodes. What do you think, Hod?
I think that would be really nice because, you know, we want to shed light on, you know, composers and screenwriters and so many artists. And
Exactly.
Because as you said, it takes a village to...
It does. I agree. Now, there are some episodes that I know ahead of time are not going to work in that format, but there are some that I think will be great, let's say, test episodes, like test sample episodes for our screeners and for us to see if they enjoy them or not.
Yeah.
All right, you go ahead now with your second pick.
So it has to be someone that's worked with Giacchino, right?
Yeah, there has to be a link in between them, yeah.
Of course. So I'm going to talk about a director I like. I know we did a director, but I just feel like talking about him because he's so... hot right now. He's so in. He's done so much in the past.
I know exactly who you're going to talk about, I think.
Let's see. Who do you think I'm going to talk about?
I think you're going to talk about Matt Reeves.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm going to talk about someone who's, I think, even fresher than Matt Reeves. I'm going to talk about Taika Waititi because Giacchino composed the score for Jojo Rabbit. Taika Waititi for me is just such a fantastic director. I have to talk about him a bit, or I just throw it to you and you go.
No. Of course, you have to talk about him a bit.
All right. Just to make sure we're playing by the right rules.
Yeah.
Look, Taika is someone who I think is a breath of fresh air in what he does. He has been thinking outside the box since he started making movies. I think he rejuvenated the Thor franchise, which became Thor to me was not the most interesting Avenger. He's not someone I necessarily liked that much. He was okay. He was funny, but when Ragnarok came, he gave him a lot of heart. He gave the story a big push, and I mean he does things with Into the Shadows. What We Do in the Shadows. Sorry. Jojo Rabbit for me was just such an amazing and pleasant film to watch with a lot of heart, which was hard to watch at times because people think it's just funny, but there are some very emotional parts, and he's such a creative person, and he's involved in so many things. He acts in his movies, he tries to produce, he's passionate about his home country, New Zealand, and tries to involve it as much as he can. He is doing things a bit differently from other directors. He's so over the top. And he is someone I would love to see delve into the Star Wars universe on a personal note. I would love to see what Taika can do. Maybe with a lighter kind of, maybe with a TV show. And he was on The Mandalorian. He had a part.
I believe he's also involved in season 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, this is how diverse this guy is. He's a team player and he plays with the team. And I mean,
let me just say one thing about Taika Waititi before I go with my link to Taika. If you haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show, you haven't seen anything. Because that show is hilarious. It is absolutely out of this world. Hilarious. It is like a mix of a mockumentary with vampires and werewolves, and they are probably the worst kind of vampire and werewolf. It's so funny. It's so dark humor. If you don't like dark humor, you're probably not gonna like it, but it's hilarious. I saw a bunch of episodes.
It is.
I think I finished season 1. I have yet to finish season 2, but it's It's genius. It's absolute genius. And he's now going to be working on a new,
by the way,
he's going to be working on a new show for HBO Max, and it's going to deal with pirates. And I cannot wait to see what he does with this.
Yeah. Yeah. He is something else, in my opinion, at this point. He's doing things very differently. He's fresh. He's original. And even when he takes an existing franchise, he makes it his own.
Yep, exactly. All right, so my link to Taika Waititi is going to be another talent who, it's sneaky, because I had to do my research because I wasn't sure if they've collaborated before. However, they're collaborating now, so it's bending the rules, but it works. So I'm going to be talking about a brilliant actor, a brilliant director, and a man who has really changed the face of motion capture performances. And that man is none other than Andy Serkis.
Mm.
And Andy Serkis and Taika Waititi are working on a project right now. It's like a biopic, which is, I think, very interesting for Taika Waititi to be doing. But again, just goes to show the diversity. Andy Serkis has played two characters that I absolutely adore. One of them is in a dystopian world, and the other is in a fantasy world. The dystopian world would be none other than Caesar from the Planet of the Apes.
Absolutely, yes.
I think that trilogy is by far one of the strongest trilogies of all time. It's for me, on my list of trilogies that I love, it's a very close second place to The Lord of the Rings, which is the other trilogy that Andy Serkis is a part of, where he plays Gollum. And I think that was essentially the role that put him on the map. He's done a lot for motion capture technology. I think the level of the push that he did with, for the Planet of the Apes is amazing. I think those films look gorgeous. I think the motion capture in them looks gorgeous. The performances are amazing. And that's all thanks to Andy Serkis. I think he has an academy now where he teaches like motion capture performances and all that stuff. It's crazy how deep into that world Andy Serkis went. I think he's an amazing actor. I think he's a brilliant creative. I think he's very underappreciated. Although he did get awarded earlier this year, I think at the BAFTAs, he got like a very nice recognition, and he gave a speech, and it was kind of amazing. And I think Ian McKellen gave him the award, which I find awesome because Gandalf. But that is who I, you know, like who I want to sort of celebrate is the genius that is Andy Serkis.
Mm-hmm. I just want to add to that, that for me, I love him as Gollum. I love him as Captain Haddock in Tintin. But
true.
Would have to say that his performance in Planet of the Apes is just sublime. It is
perfect. It is. I agree.
And I think that, you know, we've talked about this before, and I know we'll keep on talking about this, but how award season works, how the Academy Awards work and whatnot.
Yes. I know exactly where you're going with this, and I love
just,
it.
His performance in the trilogy, the pick whichever one you want of the Planet of the Apes, he deserved much, much more recognition. For me,
absolutely,
he did deserve an Academy Award nomination. I think because the physicality of what he does and the way he tries to bring these characters, which you don't really see yet. He's wearing ping pong balls left and right. I mean, him walking and becoming an ape, expressing himself as an ape, bringing so much to this character, I think he deserved much, much, much more recognition when it came to award season. And I do think that maybe later along the way, we should do an episode on you know, how we think the Academy Awards should evolve. Who should they include
100%, in terms of 100%
of what awards? Because, you know, stuntmen, I think, are people who are overlooked.
Yes.
And
yes.
Voice actors are people who are overlooked and so on. So you have that's a different episode. But for me,
yeah, I was just gonna a part of me really wanted to go wild right now and be like, you want to talk about representation in the Oscars? Yeah. That's what needs to be represented is exactly. Actors like Andy Serkis who are literally wearing latex suits almost, and they're moving and contorting and changing their voice. That is acting. That is acting. You know, you want to talk about underrepresentation. How about like you said, those stunt people that risk their lives protecting the faces of the bourgeois actors in Hollywood so that they don't break a nail. How about those beautiful actors that give us some of the greatest voice acting in the animated films? All these people aren't getting the recognition they deserve. And I'm thankful that at least our show does that for them. As little as this show is. Is it my pick again?
Yeah, it's your pick to actually give someone he's collaborated with and for me to talk about.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay. This is kind of an easy one, but I will do it. I am going to say... you know what? Okay, I'll do this. It is another director. I'll pick a movie. I'll pick the movie that the director that I was going to talk about does.
Okay.
Hopefully you can talk about the director later or I'll bring him up later, but that's what I'm going to say. The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to me that every time I watch this film, it feels more and more like a Star Wars film than any of the others in the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
In the sequel trilogy, it's weird that it feels that way, but it is the truth. I mean, sure, it's not as action-packed maybe as The Rise of Skywalker, because that's literally the final war. It's not as, fast-paced dialogue-y as The Force Awakens. But it does really delve deep into a lot of, emotional, thematic stuff. I couldn't find another word, so I just said stuff. the scene with Yoda and Luke. The dual sequence between with Rey and Kylo versus the Imperial Guards, the Battle of Crait, the dialogue between Kylo and Luke at the end, Luke literally being all ascended Jedi at the end, the greatest teacher failure is wow, something about this film just keeps getting better and better and better. And it's strangely enough becoming the most memorable out of the three, which is sort of what happened with the original trilogy, because Empire Strikes Back is the most memorable, technically speaking. Mm-hmm. And so, it's very interesting to me that this film is becoming more and more powerful the more I watch it. That's the film. And Andy Serkis is linked to it because he plays, Supreme Leader Snoke. So it's a character that caused a lot of the controversy was that, Snoke was killed off in the second one. But I don't know. Something about The Last Jedi, man, hits me every time, and I fall in love with it every time. You know, as maybe weak as the character of Rose is, or the way that critics of the film saw the character of Rose, she delivers one of the best lines, I think, in the film, which is, that's how we'll win, by not killing what we hate, but by saving what we love. That's how we'll win. And I think that's such a beautiful sentence to hear in these times in 2020, where everybody seems to be pointing the finger at everybody else and there's division everywhere. I think what we need to be focusing on is the things that we love versus the things that we hate. And this is sort of what I want for Script to Screen to start doing. Not that we weren't doing it before, but I want to do more of, which is celebrating the thing that we love, which is movies and which is storytelling and which is TV shows and all that. Yep. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Listen, I'm not going to add much to what you said because it's a movie we've discussed over and over again. It's a movie I love. It's, again, it's how the Star Wars universe is just, the fan base, excuse me, is just taking things too personally, like they own it in such a way and opinions fly left and right. They were not satisfied with The Force Awakens because they felt it was a replica of A New Hope. And right, when they tried to do something a bit different, they didn't like that either. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I've always loved it, even when you went through your phase of not enjoying it at one point.
I like to call those the dark times.
The dark times. I like defending this movie. It does things differently. It showcases characters in a different way. And I mean, what's his name? Rian Johnson was just destroyed for doing this movie. And I think it's a very underappreciated movie, honestly. I think people should watch it and look at the messages, look at things a bit more on a deeper level, on a more philosophical level. And it's a great Star Wars movie.
Agreed.
So I have to think of someone that is linked to this movie. So I'm going to take the very easy way out because my brain is completely going caca right now.
It's all good.
I am going to go for an actor which really interested me in this role. I'm going to talk about Chris Evans in Rian Johnson's film Knives Out.
Yes!
And by the way, if you have not watched it,
Watch it now.
Yeah, but spoiler alert, because I'm going to get into a lot of spoiler territory. So you've been warned.
Knives Out was a great film. I'm so happy you picked this.
I'm so happy on many levels with this movie and Chris Evans. I'm very happy for Rian Johnson, for him making this movie after Star Wars, because he got bashed. And then
he's doing a sequel to it as well. Yeah. So it's great. Yeah.
Exactly. And he is, you know, now being praised for this movie. He did a movie back in the day called Looper, which was excellent. And that's how he got to, I think, the Star Wars universe. And I think he was treated in such an unfair way. That's for Rian Johnson. But he's not the person I want to focus on. It's Chris Evans. So Chris Evans has always been, you know, Captain America or this kind of Mr. Good Guy or this very American.
Yeah, the objectified character. Jock, you know, like that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He was that jock in what's it called? Not Another Teen Movie or one of those, you know, comedies where they made
Is
fun
that
of
the film
teenager
with all the
movie.
Whipped cream?
I think so. I think he's in it, if I'm not mistaken. And he was the American jock, you know. He was Captain America. Not that he does a bad job as Captain America. On the contrary, I love him for that. That's my favorite character in the MCU. But what he does in Knives Out is he toys with your emotions and Ana de Armas' emotions and everyone. He's such a sleazy, annoying character that at some point you root for, and he and you're like, okay, no, he's not such a bad guy, he's just misunderstood. And the evolution of things and how he transforms and gets out of this Mr. America or Captain America or the all-American hero good guy and turns out to be such a dick who has a plan and who tries to kill Ana de Armas' character. His performance is on point in this movie. He goes from you not really liking him to you loving him to you rooting for him to you feeling compassionate for him and appreciating what he's doing to help to seeing that he is the biggest dick, such a bad guy, such a smart, evil plotting person. And it's a breath of fresh air when you see an actor coming out of, if you want, this kind of label or this package.
Absolutely.
Of him
Absolutely.
Being this kind of actor. And so that's why Chris Evans does a fantastic job in that.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. I don't have anything else to add to that, because that was so on point. It's always refreshing to see actors breaking out of their typecast roles. And yeah. I think Ryan Johnson did that with every single one of those actors in Knives Out. He broke them out of a mold, because you got to see all these actors playing roles that you never necessarily saw them play before. And it was very, very refreshing. I mean, Daniel Craig's performance in Knives Out in and of itself is amazing.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. And I can't wait to see him in the sequel to that film.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a movie. I don't know if you've seen this movie. That's a problem. When you give a movie, you know what? No, I'm going to go for like
an actor. Go for it. It's fine. Go for it. That's the challenge. I guess I'll have to find a way around this film. So go for it.
Okay. So oh my God, I am shooting blanks. I forgot the name of the movie. I'm just checking it. Hold on. Okay, yeah, there, here we are. So it's a movie which was released in 2017. It's called Gifted. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
It's Chris Evans and what's her face? And McKenna Grace. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I think it's also like a very cute movie. It's a movie that not a lot of people have seen. And, you know, I feel like talking about it, I feel like pushing people to maybe watch these feel-good movies, these nice movies. And it's a light movie about this single man who's raising his niece. And his niece is like super genius, super smart, very witty. And they have such a beautiful bond. And I think, what's her name? Octavia Spencer is in it too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. And what happens is that his mother, so the girl's grandmother, comes into the picture and wants to take the girl from him and raise her herself and take her and put her into this Ivy League school and whatnot. And they start to fight over the daughter. And I think the performances are on point. It's got a lot of heart. It shows you about family dynamics, which are sometimes dysfunctional. Look, it's a feel-good movie, which is, I think, ideal for COVID times. And, you know, all around the performances are very sweet, very great. Octavia Spencer is just lovely in it as the neighbor who takes care of the little girl. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so... you were right. I have not seen Gifted. I did want to watch it, but I did not watch it. I have not watched it. But I have seen another film that the director of Gifted helmed. It is one of my all-time favorite indie films, and it is none other than 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
I have so many things to say about this movie and the genius of this movie. If you haven't seen it, please go watch it. If you're into independent films, it is bittersweet. I'm not going to say it's not a happy go lucky movie. It is bittersweet. But it's genius. It's beautifully written. And brilliantly executed, with some fantastic performances by JGL, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Zoe Deschanel, and Chloe Moretz, and Matthew Gray Gubler. I mean, like, the cast is so good. The script is so good. One of my favorite sequences in the film, so yeah, spoiler if you haven't seen it. One of my favorite sequences in the film, it's pretty much memed all the time now. It is the reality versus expectation sequence at the party. Literally, Mark Webb literally splits the screen into two small boxes where you see the reality and you see the expectation of this main character going into the party, and they play simultaneously on the screen. And it is just a wonder to watch because it's so relatable, because we've all been in that situation where we're expecting something and it doesn't work out the way we wanted it to. It's so good. It's so good. I don't know what else to say about it aside from the fact that it's so good. Like that's basically it.
What I really love about this movie, honestly, is that it's a bit more realistic in terms of breaking up with someone, in terms of relationships. Yeah. Maybe it does have a bittersweet kind of ending, but they dive into the dynamics of a relationship and what it is to be very happy with that someone at first. And then, you know, the problems evolving, and then the breakup itself, and people moving on, and you having to move on and whatnot. And I mean, the performances, as you said, are just on point. That sequence, which is over the top, where they dance in the park to
What I Want. Yes.
But it does show a lot what it is to be in love with someone, because I think when we are in love, we just want to get up and dance and see cartoon birds left and right and sing. That's what I want to say about how awesome this movie is, 500 Days of Summer. And thank God they did not hop on the sequel train with 500 Days of Autumn.
Yes. That was sort of a spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen the film. But I do have to also say that I love the fact that the film is non-linear in the way that it tells its story. You mm-hmm. never, I don't think you ever fully get the full story, right? Like, you only get certain days of the 500. You don't get all 500, yes. Do you?
Of course. No, you don't.
Yeah,
you get the, like, important things, the first date.
Yeah, exactly.
And an anniversary and the breakup and whatnot. So in the first five.
But they're not told it. And the beauty of it is that they're not told in order. That's what's fantastic about this.
Not chronological, yeah.
All right, so moving right along here, I'm going to make things a little challenging as we dwindle down here, because we're almost at the end of our show.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, because I could have gone the easy way route. I could have said Zooey Deschanel. I could have said Chloe Moretz, as far as somebody linked to 500 Days of Summer. But I am going to talk about Matthew Gray Gubler. And the reason being is because he was on a show that I was a huge fan of for a long time. A show that I think this year ended. Like they it was like the finale. And I do believe it was like 14. No, I do believe it was like 10 seasons, if I was not mistaken. No, longer than 10 seasons. Just kidding. It was, oh my God. 15 bloody seasons. Another show that knocked 15, because Supernatural is now on their final 15th season as well. 15 seasons of this show. It's called Criminal Minds.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. It was so good. And Matthew Gray Gubler played Spencer Reed, who was not a normal, like, or let's say, I don't want to use the word normal. That was horrible for me to say that. But he was a character that struggled with a lot of mental health type situations. His mother, I believe, was like schizophrenic. And so for a while, he thought he was also schizophrenic. And the show is not like a happy-go-lucky show, obviously. It's very dark. And a lot of the episodes are very twisted. But he does such a good job in this show. That's how I got introduced to Matthew Gray Gubler. And then I saw 500 Days of Summer. He's so good in this show. His evolution as a character, his corpse, like, he found ways to make Spencer so human, and you empathize and you fall in love with this character so much because of how emotional he is as well. So I think he was very much the heart of Criminal Minds. It was the heart of the show. I know a lot of people might think it was Penelope, who was kind of like their IT girl, but she was more of the humor and the lightheartedness of the show, whereas Spencer was really the heart of the show, the emotional glue of the show, which is why I think he was one of the only characters that was on the show from beginning to end, aside from Kristen Vangness, who plays Penelope, the IT girl. He was one of the only characters that really stuck on from beginning to end. And yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
So we're in quite the pickle right now because I have not watched Criminal Minds.
Right.
And I have not seen any of his movies besides 500 Days of Summer.
Well, here's what you can do, because I do believe if you Google Criminal Minds, kind of do what I did with Gifted, I think you might be able to get yourself out of that pickle.
So I have to find someone from... Okay, I have someone.
Yeah.
Which is Thomas Gibson, who was on Criminal Minds, which I can't talk about him on Criminal Minds because I've not watched him on Criminal Minds. But I did used to watch him on a fun show back in the day called Dharma and Greg.
I love Dharma and Greg.
that was a fun show. It was a four or five season lived show with Jenna Elfman.
I love her so much.
And it was interesting because these two characters were just polar opposites. She was just like very free-spirited and in her kind of own bubble and La La Land. And he was this lawyer who came from money, and his mother and his parents were just, you know, so nitpicky. And her parents were also these very open-minded and hippie-ish, if you want, kind of characters. And it was a fun show. It had a lot of heart. It had very funny moments. It was very cute. Their dynamics was on point. I thoroughly enjoyed Dharma and Greg back in the day. So
sorry to put you in that pickle, but I knew there was a way for you to wiggle yourself out. It was either going to be Thomas Gibson for me, or it was going to be I don't know how to say his last name. Joe whatever. Who was in like Baby's Day Out and you know, The Godfather Part 3, you know, a film called Searching for Bobby Fischer. So I figured it was either gonna be Thomas Gibson or Joe.
Yeah.
All right. You wanna jump for like one last one before we do our recommendations? Just like something relating to
Do you wanna say anything about Dharma and Greg or
I mean, I loved it. I thought it was fun. I'm almost tempted to try to find a way to like rewatch it somehow. Yeah, because it was a fun little sitcom, and I've really been in the mood for 90s like sitcoms. And like I think this one was like late 90s though. I don't think it was like early 90s, because it was like post the Friends era, I think. No,
yeah, it was 97.
Yeah, so it was like, okay, so not completely post the Friends era, but like you know, midway through the Friends era, maybe.
Yeah.
And it ended in 2002. So I mean, yeah, I love the show. I think Jenna Elfman is, but you know, she's so much fun. She's so much fun on the show. And I think their chemistry together, I think Thomas Gibson is a great actor. I think there were a lot of issues on the Criminal Minds set as to why, because at one point he left the show. So I think there were issues and stuff. But like, I think Thomas Gibson and Jenna Elfman did a great job. I think their chemistry was literally like the selling point of the show in many ways.
Yeah. I'll go for the last one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to link, Dharma and Greg to a movie which I personally really like. It's not very popular. It's not the best movie out there, but I enjoy on many levels, which is a movie she starred in with Ben Stiller and Edward Norton called Keeping the Faith.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not.
But you have not. It's. I recommend you check it out because it has so many... very nice message. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. I'll leave it at, it's a movie that does deal with faith and religion and faith in people and in friends and friendships and whatnot. It also, you know, tackles being in love with someone for so long and how love can maybe sometimes come and play with your faith, play with your belief system. Again, I can't, because you haven't seen it and because I would like you to see it, I'm not going to go too much into it, but just the premise is about this priest and rabbi who are best friends with Jenna Elfman's character when they were kids. They grow up and he becomes a priest and he becomes a rabbi. And there's kind of a love triangle between them. And, you know, check it out to see what happens between them. But
you know what I do love is that the fact that Edward Norton actually directed the film as well. Yes, and that's very impressive. Yeah.
It is. And it does deal with faith on so many levels. Faith in people, faith in religion. That's what I like about this movie.
Yeah. I was looking at the film and I saw Jenna Elfman's film listing or like what she's been in. I had no idea she was on Fear the Walking Dead. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen Fear the Walking Dead. I've seen one season, so not enough to get to where she is, but I have been watching The Walking Dead and the last episode was very disappointing. But yeah, that's another conversation.
All right. On that note, we are going to bring the show to a close with our recommendations. What would you recommend for this for this week, Hod? I think I'm going to go with one of the films that I kind of mentioned.
Me too.
Earlier. And let's see, which one do I go for? Do I go for that one or for that one? It's driving me crazy. Okay, you know what? No, I'm going to go for a hopeful one. I'm going to go for, let's go for The Last Jedi. I think if you're a Star Wars fan, and if you're not a Star Wars fan, I would say, or like just a casual watch of a Star Wars, I would say watch The Last Jedi. I think it's a very nice, hopeful message. It ends on a very hopeful tone, even though there's a lot of like dark moments in the film and it kind of feels like it's hopeless. As Star Wars usually does, you know, when Star Wars is at its best, it's reminding us that even in the darkest times, there is hope. And so that's what I would recommend.
I'm going to be much shorter with my recommendation because I just talked about it. I'm going to go for Keeping the Faith.
Okay.
For all the reasons I mentioned before. And it's also kind of an uplifting, feel-good movie, which is not bad. And, you know, what better times to... Because I'm sure a lot of people are questioning their faith, whatever it may be, whatever they're going through in life. And so why not watch this? And that might help.
Exactly. Hey, I like it. So if you want to follow us on social media personally, you can follow me at alan.mahana and...
You can follow me on had.solo.
You can also follow the show at Script to Screen Official on Instagram and Facebook. You can also listen to the show on all podcast platforms. And if you're in the MENA region, you can do so exclusively on Anghami, which is a fun little app. You could also check out our...
Subscribe.
Yeah, exactly.
Subscribe,
and leave a comment. Give us a rating if you want. If that's available on the podcast platform that you listen to us on. You could also check out our brand new website. Yeah, brand new website. It is up. Scripttoscreen.me.
Absolutely.
And Hod, do you want to go ahead and give the shout out?
I'm going to shout out to my friends, your friends, and everybody's friends. Speedy Comics. One of the coolest comic book stores, coffee shops in Dubai. If you want to check them out online, you can check them out on Instagram on Speedy Comics ME. And for their website, it's www.speedycomicsme.com. They have a lot of cool stuff. Check it out.
Exactly. You can also... You know, once you do follow them, you're going to find out that there's going to be a very, very cool thing that they are a part of, which is the Speedy Comics Con on November 13th and 14th, which is the first ever Middle East virtual comic con. And it's going to be so much fun. There's so many guests. The guests are amazing. Script to Screen is going to be a part of a panel, and we're moderating another panel. It's going to be exciting.
Absolutely.
On that note, we want to just wish you screeners so much love and so much positivity. We thank you for being patient with us. I know you guys are seeing that we are doing a lot of work online. There's like, we're trying to offer you guys different content. Be patient with us as we resettle and stabilize the stream of content. We kind of like focus it a little bit more. We're trying to evolve the show as our times are evolving. So we're trying to adapt. And so we thank you so much for being patient with us and for supporting us as you always, always do. I think something really cool is about to happen in a couple of weeks, right, Hod?
Yeah. A lot of cool things are happening in the few weeks that are to come. So stay tuned and you will find out.
Exactly. I was sort of hinting at the reopening of a certain something, but that's cool too.
But let's just leave it, you know? We'll let people know when we're open in case there's a delay or anything. So yeah.
All right. That's why I said a couple of weeks. I wasn't necessarily putting a specific date on it. Anyway, on that note, guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. Hod, all the love and support from my end,
all
as usual.
All the love, my brother.
A solo to
Take
my
care
Chewbacca.
Screeners.
Exactly. We'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Bye.